So, is the folklore true that you the last time you played Helsinki, was the first time you came to Hudson and you wandered around and fell in love with it, and that's why you're here now?
The first time I played Helsinki Hudson was February 6th, 2010. March 6th, 2010. And yes, I stayed at the inn at Hudson, Tinney and Wendell's Inn, and I loved it, and I thought everything looked like the inn at Hudson, of course. But yes, I only saw the totally lovable parts of Hudson. and then I went looking at pornography, as I call it, the real estate shop windows, and I saw big yellow two-family house for $217,000 or something like that on 5th Street and Columbia, I think, which is, it turns out, a crack house, which was really obvious because there were teenagers lurking on each of the corners opposite the house in the freezing cold, inadequately dressed. So it was obvious that
there's not much else teenagers do in the freezing cold, inadequately dressed.
That's right. That and dancing, I guess. They weren't dancing. I felt like, well, if even the crack houses are only $217,000, and they're big, yellow, festive-looking two-family houses, it must be a wonderful place to live. And so I bought a house.
And were you in the mind to leave the city at that point, or is it just Hudson? Just
I was coming from L.A. Actually, I moved my recording studio from L.A. to Hudson, while keeping my tiny studio apartment the size of this green room, almost exactly the size of this green room. Which, although it sounds echoey, is actually not all that large a room.
Like everything else at Helsinki, the acoustics are big here.
Yes.
In the green room.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if moving to Hudson, how that's going to change your band structures. Since you left a recording studio in L.A.?
I brought my recording studio from L.A. I sold my house in Hollywood and bought a house in Hudson.
So you're going to be recording here in,
yeah,
like
been
in
recording.
The crack house?
I've been recording, not in the crack house. I bought something other than the crack house. The crack house is still there. It hasn't sold yet.
So you're still considering it?
It's occurred to me.
And I think I've read somewhere that you'd really like to...
those crack dealers must make quite a lot of money. When they're not, I mean, I guess you have to go to jail once in a while, although not very often, I guess, since it's been 2 years and the crack house is still totally obviously open. I guess all you have to do is, I don't know, lubricate the right hand. Who knows?
Hudson has all kinds of lubrication.
Yeah.
Have you become invested and involved in the sort of political infrastructure of Hudson, or not?
The extent of my involvement. Come in.
Hi there. I've just come to return the garment steamer.
Okay. Thank you. ladies and gentlemen, we are.
The garment steamer has returned.
The garment steamer.
It's like walking a dog, except it won't listen to me. Here we go.
It's a Jiffy garment steamer.
Yes, we figured it out, by the way.
It looks conspicuously like the K-9 dog unit in Sleeper, the Woody Allen movie. But it doesn't bark. It just steams garments.
Okay. Is Gabby here today?
Not yet.
Not yet? She will be?
I hope so. They're coming back from Cape Cod. As
oh,
we speak.
Right.
So they have to get here in time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, I'll see you on stage. Bye,
thank
guys.
You.
this I was asking about, and I actually have a reason that I'm asking you this question, but about any kind of political or engagement in the local city infrastructure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I haven't voted or anything, but I've been to a few parties, which is much more activity than I ever did in L.A.
The reason I ask is because yesterday on WGXC,
mm-hmm.
on the Thursday afternoon show, I heard the most entertaining thing, which was Ellen Thurston, who is the mm-hmm. board supervisor, trying to emulate your voice and singing, "I Don't Want to Get Over You." I don't know if you happened to catch that, but it was quite spectacular.
How did she do?
Her co-host tried to cut her off quickly.
She didn't think she got low enough. She didn't think she got low enough, right?
But I was kind of touched by thinking about, you know, this relative smallness of this city, and I thought it was a nice moment as a listener.
So she's probably heard me speak at PM Wine Bar during the match game contests on Tuesdays, and decided that she would imitate my voice on the radio.
Singing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So, is there a song about firehouses in your future? Since you moved here, are there more firehouses in Hudson than any other?
Funnily
like,
enough,
Wales?
I already do have a song called "Living in an Abandoned Firehouse with You," which was on the first Magnetic Field Zone. But it didn't occur to me that I ought to be doing that song tonight until you asked that infuriating question.
I thought I read somewhere you were interested in having a theater of your own at some point.
Who isn't? So I just heard that there is a theater for sale nearby. But where on earth did you hear that?
I think it was on the internet, I'm sure.
Oh, right. That the abyss of quotationless quotations, where nothing can ever be attributed again.
Can you tell us about the show tonight? I guess you're doing a couple of solo shows this fall, the Merge show and the Nonesuch show, I guess?
There will be three. This is the first, and then there's next week a show in Durham, North Carolina, to celebrate the Merge Records 25th anniversary. And then later on, in September 19th, I think I'm playing at BAM as part of the Nonesuch Records something anniversary, probably 50th anniversary.
So this is a practice show, or is that how you're thinking of it, or you're testing things out on folks, or?
Well, this is actually the first solo show of my entire life, so I think all three of them are practice shows. We're going to see whether it's just too boring for me to play only a ukulele and one little kazoo for 26 songs.
And you mean boring for you or boring for the audience?
Well, both. Rehearsing actually has been really tedious. It's the first time I've had to rehearse by myself, which means that, A, there's no one to talk to and argue with about the tempo and all that. But, B, there's no one to say, "Let's go on break now." So I just feel 24 hours a day like I ought to be rehearsing. And then I'm not, and I feel guilty. And I woke up in the middle of the night thinking basically that I ought to be rehearsing at 3 in the morning.
Is playing live something you enjoy?
No.
So why do you do it?
To publicize records. Touring is particularly horrible. I like being involved in musical theater, though I don't like performing. I like writing songs for other people to perform, and I like going to the theater. but I feel like live music is something that I don't have any particular interest in, mostly because almost all live music now is too loud for me. I have a hearing disorder in my left ear, so that anything louder than string quartet is at least unpleasant, if not physically painful.
And is that so playing solo, I guess, is well, I don't know, why is it taking until now to play solo?
Well, I've never wanted to play solo. I still don't want to play solo. So anyway, I've come up with a sort of story in that I'm playing 26 songs, one for each letter of the alphabet, in alphabetical order. So people who are familiar with my work can wonder what song I'm going to play next in a different way than they would usually.
They have a choice of five or six, or if it's J,
right,
or X, they
right.
only have one or two.
Right, so everyone can probably figure out what I'm going to do for X, but not Z. So Z is there are two possibilities for Z, and I'm doing one of them.
So it's a parlor game a little bit too.
It is. Yes.
And is it? You haven't decided. It's not something you call an audible and go with the other Z, if. But you're going to do one Z or the other.
Predetermined.
Did that clicking sound?
I think it was my.
Okay. That's not the sound it made.
No. Well.
But
shouldn't be making any clicking. It's those. I see the levels are moving.
It's still working.
Yeah.
Okay.
The numbers are still moving.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Good.
That's
good. I once interviewed Diamanda Galas and found that the interview was only about 15 seconds long, and after that, for some reason, the tape deck had spontaneously turned off, though it looked like it was working. Mm.
Well, I put two things down, so hopefully
yes.
one of my
yes,
electronic
good.
Things will
Yeah, that's what I should have done.
What was the... Can you tell me a little bit about what you did at BAM in June? Was it with Ira Glass? Was that something that was live, or was that composition? I don't know much about
it. Was an episode of This American Life presented live on stage at BAM, in which there were several different musical events that would ordinarily simply be stories, news stories. If you're not familiar with This American Life, God help you. I'm not going to explain it to you, but it was the musical equivalent. And originally I was supposed to do a musicalization of a story, but there wasn't time to actually develop it before the show, so I ended up only doing two kind of interstitial songs, which I think got cut from the radio broadcast version, which is only an hour long, sort of two and a half or whatever the live show was. But we're developing the same story for a later radio slash live extravaganza. But this time I'm going to record it first so that it can go out on the radio, and then figure out how to adapt that for life. The way I make records.
Mm-hmm.
Much more intelligent way of dealing with it, in my opinion.
Is that something that, even if it's recorded in advance, and thinking about like radio broadcasts, is that meaningful for you, or not?
How do you mean?
The idea of broadcast, I guess, do you consider that differently than someone sitting at home and listening to your record, the idea of the simultaneous broadcast of your music to many listeners at the same time?
Well, if someone listens to the record, they can pause it and go pee and come back and hear the rest of it, but with radio they don't have that ability if it's being live broadcast. But I think a huge section of the audience doesn't listen to radio live anymore as much as they listen archived.
Did you was radio important to you as someone growing up with music?
Yeah, most of my memories of the 70s are radio, actually.
Was it car radio or like...
No, I had a little white AM/FM radio where, as far as I know, the FM didn't get any reception, but it was a little clock radio. I only ever listened to AM on it.
And you were in Boston or...
At that time I was in Boston, yeah. One of my first memories is of the first time I bought a record, which was the Jackson 5 song ABC, pressed into a, what's it called, a flexi disc. But it was in the cardboard of the back of the cereal box. So you're actually putting the needle into the cardboard, basically. So it was unbelievably lo-fi. I've heard a recording of Edison's so-called first recording, which made the ABC sound really much worse. I listened to lots of top 40 AM radio, and I had a subscription or whatever, it's an account with Columbia House Records and Tapes, which, being a child, I must have said that I was 18, and so I didn't have to have a parent sign for me. So I got lots of records in the mail for free, but I didn't have any way of paying for them. But they also made it so that you couldn't cancel. I totally felt guilty about it and felt like I should be stopping them from sending me these. After I wasn't 8 years old anymore, I felt like, wait, this is not honest. I need to stop this. And I don't really like this new Dan Fogelberg record, and I'd be happy to send it back to them. But there wasn't a way to cancel, and I never really figured it out until they announced that they were canceling it.
It was when they went bankrupt?
That was later.
There's another Magnetic Fields record coming out next year. Is that what did I read that on the internet?
Well, I haven't started writing it yet, so,
if
you say so.
what are you working on at the moment?
The Ira Glass mini musical. But really, what I've been working on is playing this show. I've written the songs for the Ira Glass piece, but I haven't started underscoring it yet. He wants the entire thing musicalized. So it's going to be 20 minutes of music, 7 of which I have already written. We'll see how that goes.
Is it harder to, more difficult to write music by the minute or by the some of the other constraints that you've done, like writing a different love song in each genre or something like that?
Well, it depends on what the constraints are, but if I were given 17 minutes and told that I have to fill them as quickly as possible, I could say play G for 17 minutes on any 3 instruments, and that's composition. So it depends on how specific he wants to get with how that's going to go.
Do you need some sort of constraint, like tonight you're going to play alphabetically on the... Do you need some sort of structure when you go into a project like that?
I don't need one, but I think it helps me and the listener to understand that there's a story, beginning and middle and end. I mean, I could also have done it in order of something else, like short to long, or different keys. The first four songs will be in A, then B, then C. Thought about doing that. But it is, it's nice to have an order.
And this one in particular, as you were pointing out, will, I think, end up engaging the audience in a pretty substantial way.
At least the members of the audience who are familiar with what the rest of my work is, yeah. I have one friend who said that she was looking forward to coming tonight and hearing Andrew in drag. And I told her that since I was doing the set in alphabetical order, she could go home at 10:02 in 30 seconds.
So now you have to quickly think, Tom, of Stephen's catalog and which song is 2 minutes and 30 seconds long, right?
Well, it's perfect because you have an audience that's varying degrees of engagement. So some people will have be coming along because somebody dragged them here and they'll never have heard you, and so that level of engagement won't be at all interesting. But the others that are
deep fans and deeply know your catalog.
Well, the second song obviously is the Book of Love, so the people who are only vaguely familiar with music in general, who might have heard the Book of Love as done at a wedding or something, will think, oh, he's that guy.
Is that, that's your Stairway to Heaven, or the song
yes.
that's strapped
seems
to your back?
Seems to be my calling card.
That
yeah.
you can't shake?
More and more, I've gone from being the 69 Love Songs guy to being the Book of Love guy.
And is that problematic for you, or is that okay?
Throughout my life, there has been oldies radio in which the same 50 songs of the 50s and 60s were recycled again and again, as though they were a modern Pandora channel. One of those songs was The Book of Love. I don't remember, in fact, who was the artist who made that song famous.
I think the question is who wrote The Book of Love?
Yes. But I've noticed that I haven't heard that song in at least 10 years. And I'm wondering if I have anything to do with that.
There can only be one Book of Love on the oldies charts?
Or on the charts, period.
Not so much that, but that the existence of my song, The Book of Love, sort of attacks the earlier song. And spoils it in some way. Just as the Katy Perry song California Girls spoils My California Girls, which spoiled the Beach Boys' California Girls. So now there's three and it's fun again. There should be another one. Like,
you're waiting for
Girls
Taylor Swift
with
or...
the umlaut. Like Robert Girl from DAF. Not Taylor Swift. Maybe Anstrutzen and Neubauten.
Are they still together?
They could get back together again.
Everyone else
They're
is.
Not dead.
Yes.
So have you been writing? When did you move to Hudson?
Almost 2 years ago.
And have you been making new material since you moved here?
Of different kinds, sure.
And is your environment here, like, in a very overt way affecting the songs you're working on? Are they about your
Oh, yeah,
here?
All of my songs are about antiques. No.
The local people
No,
here,
it's, no, it isn't.
They won't hear a shift.
I don't think so. Yeah, no, I haven't been sitting around in bars writing songs, which is what I generally do when I'm in a songwriting cycle. In fact, I didn't drink for a year, so I sat around not at all in bars writing songs. and also didn't write a single song. But I was working on a soundtrack to a Catherine Deneuve movie, and I wrote my book 101 two-letter words, for which I will be doing a reading at the Spotty Dog in a few months.
That's a Scrabble book?
You could call it a Scrabble book. A Words with Friends book. Yes, yeah. 101 two-letter words with illustrations by Roz Chast. So it's also sort of a humor book or art book. It's too small to be a coffee table book.
Does it have a rhyming index or something?
No.
I guess you're well known for your exquisite rhyming.
Thank you. But there's only 101 of the words, so a lot of them are not going to rhyme. Like ab. Actually, most of them wouldn't rhyme. Ah-ah, ab, ad, a, ag, ah, I guess. The ones that begin with vowels are not likely to rhyme with anything else in the book, because they wouldn't, yeah.
Are you a Scrabble purist?
Purist?
Or, well, do you play, like, strictly by the rules? Like, we play, we differ the amount of letters, sometimes. Take 11 instead of 7.
I do actually have a different version of Scrabble, which is the bigger board, and you have 100 letters, but you still take 7 letters. You have a 7-letter rack, but there's quadruple word scores at the edges, and the scoring gets much higher. It's fun. It's different. There's a different version of an allowable, so-called legal version of Scrabble, in which you only play up to a certain number of points. I think 100 points, and then you're done, something like that, for short games. Most of my Scrabble playing is online with me and my various Scrabble-y friends, and we just play on the computer, so there's only one set of rules possible.
Do you know if that short version has been around for a long time, or is that a recent addition?
I don't know
where I heard this. It's some sort of news story in the last 6 months about board game companies starting to market abbreviated versions of all their games,
mm-hmm.
because they were struggling so much and the attention span has changed so much of contemporary culture in a way that was sort of, I understand, but it was a little bit sad. But now everybody needs a 20-minute version of Monopoly and a 15-minute version of Parcheesi.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Oh, are you still doing your thing?
Hello.
We are.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello, Brian Dewan.
Hello. Should I come back later?
You want to join?
Yeah.
Sure.
Pull up a chair.
We were just talking about Scrabble.
Yes.
And how board game companies are now doing abbreviated versions of their board games to reflect modern atrophied attention spans.
Of course, it seems like such a speculative thing. Like, how do they know that people want to have worse Scrabble?
They probably are trying various things. One thing that Hasbro really ought to try is hiring competent people to do their Scrabble online, because it's so bad, it works so badly that I can't get mine to keep working long enough to complete a game. Whereas Words with Friends works perfectly, Scrabble, for whatever reason, is, and I've tried different versions of it, is the worst implemented app I've ever used.
electronic scrap.
Yes. Theoretically, it's currently more popular than the acoustic Scrabble. But I think Words with Friends is far more popular than the electronic Scrabble.
So Words with Friends, is that a Scrabble-oid game?
Yes. It's really as close to Scrabble as they could get away with legally, I think.
Do you know when Scrabble was invented?
Early 20th century. I was just reading that the original inventor of Scrabble played it with his family a while after it was developed. But throughout his long life, he never once exchanged his letters. He didn't believe in it.
Wow.
He just played those letters, no matter what they were.
He created the rule, but
he created the rule, but he didn't. He thought it would spoil his fun to.
He didn't want
to
do
exchange
it.
Letters.
I can appreciate that, even though I don't think there's anything the matter with it. But
right.
It does sort of seem like maybe it makes people feel like they're getting some kind of advantage. But it, you know, I guess if you're trapped with bad letters, it's worth a shot at mixing it up a little bit, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to work with what you've got in life.
Yeah, that's more appealing in the game.
I started playing Words with Friends with my mother, which changes the dynamic a lot, because I feel like there's only so ruthless I can be before I start feeling like you're doing this to your own mother. But to counteract that, I've started being extra ruthless. So recently, I had like a Q and a Z, and there were only 7 letters left in the kitty. So I exchanged all my letters and took the other 7 letters, basically leaving her with the probability of getting the Q and the Z, which were not going to be playable before the end of the game, so that she would be stuck with the 20-some-odd points. And lose by 40-some-odd points, at least. So, yes, I'm a horrible person.
I don't know, it doesn't sound so terrible to me. You're just playing your best.
Yes.
Just as every mother would want their son to do.
But it's not like you pull some vicious stunt like what? Wasn't there something in the game of life where you could send somebody back to the beginning, or you know, or when you play croquet you can knock somebody's ball way the hell out of the playing area, and it just seems...
Or in backgammon, where you can be really malicious about returning someone at just the last moment all the way to the beginning. Yeah.
It does seem like Scrabble is more benign, is that it's not set up to put somebody in a position to just knock somebody out and kind of ruin the rest of the game for them.
Unless you put the Q and the Z back in the
Yes,
kitty.
Wait, so putting the Q and the Z back... Oh,
just at the end of the game to make sure that
at the last
going
minute
to,
when there's no U's or O's,
yeah,
or
nowhere to
you're...
play the Q and the Z, so they're definitely going to be stuck with them.
Oh yeah, but
it doesn't mean that they forfeit their entire score or anything like that. Yeah.
No, but that's just the misfortune that falls on you, rather than your opponent is nailing you for good in one gesture.
Mm.
Which nobody really wants to do.
You can do that in Twister, I guess. And just completely ruin the other person's game. By tickling them or something. Something ruthless.
Oh.
Yeah, but I don't know if there are rules against touching your opponent in Twister. I haven't read the rules recently.
I think generally most people, at least adults that are playing Twister, there's an intention there.
Yes, that's the hope.
That would probably be why I don't think I have ever played Twister as an adult.
No, I would think that you couldn't do something like tickle somebody. I mean, you get all tangled up maybe, but you're still kind of, it's kind of static. It's not like there's a lot of room for malarkey like that, is there?
Well,
just,
only the
you're
beginning.
Not supposed to do that.
You
once the hands
the
are down,
yeah.
Yeah, once both hands
yeah.
are down, though.
They could tickle as you're shifting.
Is that something people do?
Not in the Twister games I've been a part of recently.
No, Hasbro is working on that, too.
Maybe that's a good place to end.